All right. Thanks, everybody, for coming to Beer Rock tonight for our Pearl Street native Wisconsin hop feature. I'm Brian from Beer Rock, and I'm joined here by Paul Stang, owner and cultivator of Silver Hops Farm, and Joe Kachaver, founder and brewmaster at Pearl Street Brewing in La Crosse. And we're just going to have a little informal discussion here about beer and hops, and specifically the Northern Discovery hop in the Linalool IPA. And we'll kind of start with Paul here. And the whole reason we're here today is to share the story of the Northern Discovery hops, the only variety native to the state of Wisconsin, and its use in Pearl Street's Linalool IPA. And Paul, if you could you take us back to 2007 and tell us about the discovery of the Northern Discovery hop?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Back in 2007, I was still finishing up a military career. I was down in Texas, and my parents lived in Sun Prairie on a farm that was 40 acres away from the farm I grew up on. They put in a new driveway and cut it through a little woodlot that was on the property, and then for a few months they drove up and down the driveway, and one day my dad looked straight up and there was a hop plant growing on a dead tree that had formerly been in the middle of the forest. He was a professor of horticulture at the UW. He was retired at that point, but he immediately knew that was a hop plant. So I was a home brewer down in San Antonio in a pretty big homebrew club, and so he sent hops down to us and said, hey, why don't you give these things a try? We expected they'd probably taste like old sweat socks or something, and it turned out when we brewed them with the club, everybody thought they were great. We informally tested them and had the members of the club tell us what hop they thought that most tasted like, and almost everybody came back with a different answer, so that kind of gave us our first toehold that maybe this was something interesting. It was different. People couldn't put their finger on what it really was, and it brewed really good beer. You know, you flash forward a number of years, and now we have all the scientific lab tests done and a lot of years under our belt, and we still seem to go back to our roots in the sense that drinkers try the beer, and it tastes like something they've never had, and it's unique and special. These days we know why, but that's kind of how it was born.
It almost seems to me too coincidental, because you can tell me if I'm wrong, but now you were the home brewer and your dad was the horticulturist at the UW, and I mean was this almost destiny that it seems like, you know, the two people in your professions, like, wow, that was just too almost coincidental to be, you know, to figure out what they are and their use and tell me more about that.
Well, it certainly is a unique set of circumstances, and it may well be why this was the first and to this date the only you know, trademarked hop from Wisconsin that it was wild cultivated, because it does kind of require some really unique circumstances for discovery unless it was intentional. And so to accidentally discover it, to have a horticulturist and a home brewer who's got access to a lot of other much better brewers than myself at the time who could really evaluate it and at least get us off the ground. Yeah, that's a very unique circumstance. It was great from a family's standpoint. I'd been in the military by 20 years at that point, and you know, anything that gets us to do something together was a really unique and great thing. So in that sense, it was really special as well.
Let's get into the uniqueness of the hop, because it has apparently, and again, you can explain this better than I can, but it has more than two times the amount of linalool than any other hop in the nation, in the world, something like that. And I don't know the science behind it, but I'm sure you do. And I mean, that's where the namesake comes from for the beer.
Yeah, as you'd pointed out, Pearl Street has named the beer linalool, which is one of many essential oils that are in hops. There's probably several hundred in every hop cone out there, and they're all in different ratios, which contribute different characteristics to the final beer. It just so happens that when we ran the lab tests on Northern Discovery, we saw what wasn't a shockingly high linalool number, but linalool is a very unique essential oil. It's been described as pure pleasant, in the sense that it's just the most pleasant thing. It's been described as, to me, it smells like Fruit Loops cereal. no trademark infringement there. But it's just a straight up nice and pleasant taste, and it's added to a number of other, as an ingredient, a number of other products artificially. In our case, when we ran the tests and we looked at these numbers, which didn't seem like they were that big, but then we compared them against the USDA approved list of or certified list of hops, which is several hundred hops long on that list. We saw that nobody was even close. And so we re-ran the tests, and we've been rerunning the tests for years. And lo and behold, yes, we are, while it's a small component, it makes a huge impact on the final beer product, and as well as on the hops themselves just when you smell them. And we really feel like that's probably the one factor that was giving us that unique characteristic, that pleasant-tasting beer in the end, that nobody could put their finger on what it was they liked about it, but that they just really liked it.
Yeah. So when was the decision made to grow the farms, grow the hops at a farm commercially? You know, I'm sure it started off as something of a hobby, perhaps, and using it in your own beer. And at some point, you had to make the decision, like, okay, let's do this.
I don't think there was any one moment where we just said, you know what, we're gonna go from goofing around to doing something serious. You know, my dad was a horticulture professor, but he was also very entrepreneurial. He started a cranberry bog down in Chile in South America. So for him, he could immediately think big. But he didn't really have a toehold in the brewing industry. I didn't really either, but at least I could speak the terms and I understood the chemistry of brewing beer and things like that. So what we had ended up doing was we started out, our first trellis was an 8-foot-tall trellis. A standard commercial trellis is 19 feet. So it was a short little trellis. It had about 6 plants on it. And from that, he did an eighth of an acre. And from that, he did a third of an acre. And when I moved up to Wisconsin after I retired in 2012, we pushed it up to a full acre at 19 feet and the standard commercial size and spacing. But each year was sort of a growing, but we were starting to sell to customers in 2010, so it didn't take us very long to go from what do we have, figure it out, to let's let the brewing industry mess around with it and see what they think.
So you kind of alluded to this already, but I mean, what were some of the challenges of starting a hop farm? And, you know, like you said, just going from an 8-foot trellis to 19, and I'm sure along the way there was equipment challenges too. Could you tell me about some of those things?
Yeah, I'm a member of the Wisconsin Hop Exchange, and we have about 50 growers or so, but at every meeting there's 10 or 15 people who show up, and they're like, yeah, I want to start. I think I'm going to throw in 10 acres real quick, and I'll make a bunch of money. We pretty quickly realized you have to know a little bit about just about everything. You have to know, you know, how are you even going to get a 25-foot telephone pole stood up, how do you build an engineer a trellis system that's going to withstand the weather? And we're looking at 10 to 20,000 pounds of weight on it when the hops are at full growth. How are you going to build a website? How are you going to market? How are you going to, the agronomy pieces, the fertilizing and the nutrition? You've got to dry these hops. You've got to get them to market quickly. Pelletizing, packaging. There's a lot to it.
Yeah.
And the number of people who can do all those things that in one person isn't a whole lot. I'm not tooting my own horn here, but it It was a learning curve, to be sure, and a lot of things that we really didn't think about at first.
Now, we're celebrating Pearl Street beer here today, but this hop is used in other beers, in other breweries. Can you kind of tell us and everybody here, like, what other beers we can find this hop in?
You really can't in Wisconsin. Pearl Street basically has all of it. So I have a nephew who brews out in Ohio. He gets a little bit out there.
Okay.
But and he was here with us slaving away in the hop yard for years. So he's loved it from the get-go, and he's family, and it is a family event. So, but if you want to try Northern Discovery, Linalool is the only place you're really going to be able to do it. We do sell a little bit of, you know, 1 and 8 ounce packages on the website, just so homebrewers have access to it. And the Madison Brewers and Tasters Guild usually gets a few pounds every year so that the brewers there can mess around with it and taste it. But it is tough to get your hands on.
Yeah, okay.
And we sell out every year, so.
Interesting. All right, let's get Joe involved here. We've put it off here, but Joe, now that we know about the Northern Discovery hop, let's talk about its use in Linalool, and let's start when you first started experimenting with this hop. I'm sure you just didn't, you know, for the first time create barrels and barrels of Linalool. You had to do an experimental process and find out how are we going to use this hop. Take me back to that.
Okay, well, Brian, we get a lot of people that grow hops in their backyard, and they come to the brewery every fall with a bucket full of hops, and they say, hey, do you want to buy these, put in your beer? And I'm like, well, what kind are they? Well, I don't know, you know. Well, okay, I can't really use them. I don't know what they are, you know. And for years, I mean, this goes on. I think a lot of breweries have this, and you'd like to, but, like, you really can't, because at the end of the day, you have to turn out a quality product that people like to drink. And when Paul and I first talked, you know, I kind of thought, well, this guy's got a couple of hop vines on his porch, you know. And then we got talking, and I found out he actually knew a lot about not only growing hops, but brewing beer, too. And I don't remember the exact details, but we started experimenting with these hops, and I was intrigued by them because they weren't really a hop. He was like, I was like, well, what kind of hops are they? And he didn't say, I don't know. He said, they're like no kind of hops you've ever had, which I was like, yeah, okay. What do you mean? And he said, no, this is like a new, completely new and different variety of hops that you've definitely never had. I said, oh, okay, well, let's talk then. So we did. And so we just, you know, as with all beers and all the testing we do, and at Pearl Street Brewery, we just constantly brew beer, you know, of all kinds. And we're always just coming up with ideas and trying to be creative. And that's part of the process of brewing beer, is to create new flavors and combinations of ingredients that give you interesting flavors and aromas and, you know, make the beers unique and exciting. And so I was really intrigued when I found out that this was not just some, you know, regular commercially available hop that somebody was growing in their yard, but that it was actually a totally new variety. And so that kind of really piqued my interest. And then Paul and I got to know each other and we've, you know, been out to their farm and checked it out, and he was serious, and he was planting. You know, his dad, I guess, found these hops, but then they replanted them, and they began to cultivate them already at that point, you know, close in the hop yard next to their house. And we started playing with it, and when we brewed the first batch, I was like, oh, these are good hops. I mean, you can learn a little bit about what they're going to be like by smelling and tasting and looking at the raw hop, and then looking at the you know, the chemical breakdown. You can, you know, have your hops analyzed by a lab, and they'll tell you the the content of oils and the bittering, you know, potential of the hop and these sort of things. But I mean, really, it's all about how does it taste, though. You know, what does it smell like when it's brewed into a beer?
That leads me perfectly into my next question. I mean, what makes Linalool unique? What flavors do you think are present in this beer, and what makes it unique?
Well, the Linalool. Excuse me, and you guys touched on this a little bit. Linalool is an aromatic compound that's found in hops, and it's not a hop oil per se. It's a sesquiterpene, I believe, and it's more of an aromatic compound than a flavor compound, and it's very interesting. I didn't really know much about it myself until. You know, this happened, and we started looking into Northern Discovery hops. And then Paul was telling me, well, this has a lot more linalool than any other commercially available hop variety. And so that piqued my interest, and so I did some research on it. And it's very prevalent in this beer, the linalool. And as this, it's interesting, as this beer ages, the linalool itself, the aromatic compound, becomes more prevalent. Because I think it has more longevity compared to the other hop oils, other light hop oils that kind of disappear over time and fade. Hoppy beers, especially aromatically hoppy beers, are typically best enjoyed fresh because they have the kind of the maximum quantity of those aromatic hop oils that everybody likes when they're you know, drinking an IPA. And with this beer, it's very interesting because the aromatics change over time, and that the linalool becomes more prevalent over time. So I was totally intrigued by all that information, and we fine-tuned the brewing process in such a way where the linalool will actually bind with a glucose molecule within the fermenter, and with a slight shift in pH. So at that point, when it's bound, it doesn't have any aroma at all. But after it the bond breaks with a slight shift in pH, that linalool molecule is released, and the aromatics come out more, and they come out, and the beer itself becomes more aromatic, and so that all that sciencey stuff really. Gets me excited about brewing and stuff, and I know Paul also knows a lot about that process as well.
So has this become one of your flagship beers? I don't know how you define flagship. It's a year-round offering from Pearl Street now, and I mean, what was the reaction from consumers and the decision to make this a year-round beer?
Well, at first, it wasn't a year-round beer because there wasn't enough hops to brew it all year. But as we got talking, and you know, we threw it out there, and with any beers, regardless of what the brewer thinks of that beer or what the brewery thinks of that beer, it's really up to the public to decide, the beer drinkers to decide which beers stay and which beers don't stick around. And so we brew the beer, we're excited about it, we throw it out there, you know. See if it's gonna be a popular beer or not, and this one was extremely popular right out of the gates, and so I was like, Paul, how many hops can we get next year? You know, we're kind of just trying to push that limit each year, and that defined how much beer we can brew, Silver Hops grew their field to the point where we have enough hops to have this beer year round. So that's pretty exciting for us.
It's not all just about the hops, I'm assuming. Was there, did you have to find a malt or malts that complemented this particular hop?
Not so much complemented the hop, but got out of the way.
Okay.
We brew another beer, Dankenstein. It's also a hoppy hoppy IPA, and it's more malt forward. So there's a lot of competing flavors in there, which just gives it a lot more complexity. But this beer, the malts kind of take a back seat to the hops because I really wanted to design a beer that showcased the Northern Discovery hops.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I have to I'd add to that that we've never had a problem selling out of hops. It's not as much self-promoting as it sounds because we were small, and but we were able to be picky and choosy about who brewed with our hops because we were trying to build our own brand. We are our own unique variety, and we discovered very early on that if we sold our hops to somebody who put it in a poor quality beer, it reflected very badly on us. The marriage between Silver Hops and Pearl Street was perfect, and Joe started to delve into the science that he can blow your head up with it, but he knows what he's doing and he makes a great beer. I don't get a lot of influence in how he brews or what he's going to end up brewing, but man, when I tried Linalool for the first time and it showed off Northern Discovery the best way it can, we were ecstatic.
So I guess that kind of wraps up my questions about Northern Discovery and Linalool, but while we got you here, Joe, can we just touch briefly on the other beers we're featuring on tap today? The Smokin' Hemp Porter. Now, this is a limited release for you. Can you go into a little bit more about that and the use of hemp in the beer?
Yeah, that seems to be a popular thing these days. hemp and hemp products used in beer. But we've been brewing Smokin' Hemp Porter for many years. I can't remember the first year we produced it, but there's this band that came out of La Crosse, and they still play once in a while. In fact, half their members have moved to Madison, so that's why they don't play as much as they used to. But the band is called Smokin' Bandits, and they're good friends of ours. And they started their own kind of fest out in La Crosse, right in the Mississippi River Valley, or just south of La Crosse. And it was called the Bandit County Fair, you know. And we had already talked about brewing a beer with them. And so we brewed the Smokin' Hemp Porter just kind of as a collaboration with that band, you know. And it was fun, and it's the beer itself is it's a porter, so it's a dark, roasty, malty beer, but it's not as malt forward as like a stout or as burnt as a stout, so it's a little bit lighter body than you'd find in a typical American stout, and it's also brewed with smoked malt, that's been smoked over cherry wood to give it a really nice smoky kind of backdrop, and then we used toasted hemp seeds in that beer, and toasted hemp seeds are great. They're nutty. They're crunchy and nutty, and they add that component to the beer, like earthy. I don't know how to describe it, but they really kind of set that beer off on it in kind of its own category. We release that beer every year. It's also seasonal, like I said, April 20th every year. We release that and. We just brew a couple of batches of it and spread it around Wisconsin, and when it's gone, it's gone. We were never able to get approval by the government for that beer because they were so kind of anti, I don't know, hemp, I guess. But those times have changed. Obviously, there's a bunch of beer out there being brewed with hemp and hemp products, and hemp's like, you know, legal to grow in this country now. So. That's like things have changed, but this beer has been produced, but we could never sell it outside of Wisconsin because then you have to get the nod from the TTB, which is the federal government, and they wouldn't give that because, and I tried, you know, we created the label and the artwork and everything, and you send it in, and it's this process to get what's called a certificate of label approval from the government, and they were like, no, you can't do that. I didn't understand why. And, oh, because, you know, you can't promote pot. It's illegal. And it's like, well, yeah, except for we're not. This isn't, there's no pot in here. It's no dope. No one's getting stoned off of this beer. Yeah. Oh, hemp. Well, I tried literally for years to explain to them that, well, these aren't even the same plant. Like, what are you talking about? There's no part of this plant that's, like, psychoactive that's gonna, you know, I don't know. It was a long process, and And finally, after just a couple of years ago, we got that certificate of label approval from the government so we could sell it outside of Wisconsin. But it was a long process. You know, I kept all the emails because they're kind of funny to me. You know, it's like I'm having this long-winded argument via email with this one guy. What was his name? His first name was Battle. I swear to God.
That's perfect.
Battle Martin. Yeah, that's his name, Battle Martin. And he was the guy that was, like, my assigned person, you know, from the government that regulated all my labels. And, I think many brewers across the country know this guy by emails because he regulated for many years. He was the guy, like the buck stops here guy in his department to regulate all beer labels in the country. Well, now there's like a whole team of people because there's a lot more beer, a lot more breweries, a lot more labels, right? But he was the guy, Battle Martin, and we went to battle on this back and forth.
I feel like there could be a whole podcast on this topic here, but
you know, I have to tell the story. The first time my dad sent hops down to me, I was in San Antonio, Texas. The box showed up. It had been opened by the DEA, and they put a big sticker on it. Said, opened by the DEA. My dad freaked out. But
really?
Yeah.
Did they think it was?
Well, it was a big pile of hops, which are the same genus as marijuana. So I can imagine it was pretty exciting to the drug dog.
Did they leave you a note? They're like, we smoked some of these, man. You're getting ripped off.
I don't know. I just thought it was too funny to pass up telling.
We've actually had the same thing with the hemp coming in because up until it became legal, you know, which it's like now in the U.S., we've always got it from Canada. And, yeah, they tear the boxes open every time and they have it retaped shut. So they checked it out.
Interesting.
I don't know what they do. Like, I don't know. It doesn't look like marijuana to me. They have a lab there right at the border to test it.
Well, we got one more beer on tap, so we'll end with this one. Tell us about the Pop Gosa, because I believe now you make a Gosa for every season, winter, spring, summer. Clue me in.
All right, so the Pop Gosa is our, yes, you're correct. It is our spring seasonal Gosa. So we've been brewing sour beers at Pearl Street for a long time, but they've just kind of reached the popularity where it sort of warrants us actually putting them in bottles and trying to sell them outside of the local area. And we started with a beer called Sour Winter Gosa. And that beer is a Gosa, which if we have a minute, Gosas are German ale, you could say. They're an ancient beer, so they go back hundreds and hundreds of years. And they were brewed in the region of where the Gosa River exists in kind of northern, north central Germany. So the Gosa River is in the mountains there, and they do salt mining, and they're actually the mountain range is the Ore Mountains, and they, you know, that was kind of a big part of their economy up there for centuries was ore mining. One of the things they mined up there was salt, and because there's so much salt in the soil, as the springs. You know, the water coming out of the mountains flowed into the river. They just brought all the salt with it. So the water itself actually is not like salty as much as the ocean, but it's a very salty, briny kind of water coming out of there. And back in those days, you know, they pumped water directly out of the river and brewed beer with it. I mean, mountain spring water is pretty clean. 1,000 or 700 years ago or whatever, a long time. And so they brewed it with it, and that was kind of what makes the Gosa a unique beer, is the water itself contains a lot of minerals, not just salt. So to replicate that, I brewed the Gosas at Pearl Street with this salt I found that's mined in Utah that is from a like ancient ocean seabed. Out there, and it not only has a lot of salt in it, but it has a lot of other minerals in it as well. So the water itself is kind of the backdrop of that beer, and it's salty. I mean, you can't really taste the salt. It's pretty subtle, but it's in there, and salt is one of those things. If you just put a little in, it just kind of enhances without giving you that actual saltiness. So that's what I liked about this beer style. And then it's a sour beer, so all of our Gosas at Pearl Street are spontaneously fermented, which is also how beer would have been brewed historically, which means wild airborne microbes are brought into the raw, unfermented beer, and they actually do some of the fermentation. Well, some of those microbes are yeast, and yeast make alcohol and carbon dioxide. That's why there are our friends. But also, bacterias are a lot of good bacterias are present in the air, and that spontaneously ferments all of our gozes there, and that's what gives us the sourness. So they turn some of the natural sugars into lactic acid or lactic acid. So that's where you get the sourness. So we am I getting too technical here?
So I feel like I'm in a science class.
Yeah, sorry. Anyway, this is the kind of stuff that turns me on. So we measure the pH, which is a measure of the acidity level and everything. So water is like a neutral pH, and then as you move down the scale, you know, things get more sour, right? So we just measure that pH, and then we arrest that bacterial fermentation, and then we pitch a yeast into it, and the yeast takes it from there. And then that's kind of the base for all these beers. So our Sour Winter Goes is the first one we made. It's made from spruce tips that we get from our friends, the Eberts, up in Juneau, Alaska. It's a family that's good friends of ours. And they pick all these spruce tips every spring, the new spring growth, and they literally pack them into coolers and bring them to La Crosse. They have relatives that live in La Crosse. They travel back and forth a lot. So we get the spruce tips from them, and we have for many years. And also that beer is brewed with the essence, the essential oil from the bergamot orange, which is the orange that is famous for being used in Earl Grey tea as kind of the aromatic character of that tea. And so those two flavors, like I said, we play around at the brewery a lot with flavor combinations, and we're just constantly doing this, you know, sort of like testing of whatever flavors. No, this might make a good beer. And so that was kind of the winner for that. And that's how all of our gozas started. This goza that you have on tap here at Beer Rock is the Pop Goza, and this is hibiscus, lavender, and cucumber. So we put a ton of we use a cucumber extract, and then we put a ton of flowers in, just like flower petals that we have to buy in bulk and dump in our fermenter, the lavender and the hibiscus. So the brewery smells great when we're doing that. And then this one's done, this is kind of our spring one. So this will go probably through the end of June. On June 1st, we'll release our 17 up, which is a lemon lime goza that we originally brewed for our 17th anniversary 3 years ago now. And then in the fall, which is our newest goza, brewed with guava, mango, and also locally grown cranberries. So that's kind of our year-round seasonal goza lineup.
Cool. Well, thank you, Paul and Joe, for taking the time to talk about beer and hops and the whole process here. I greatly appreciate it. I don't know if you still have time to do a tasting, if anybody wants to.
Absolutely.
And anybody wants to ask Paul any questions about hops? Thank you, everybody, for coming today. Appreciate it. And yeah, it was a lot of fun.